Supervisors will reconvene, and we're on item 7B, County Administration, and probably need public comment on this, I would guess, so if you could outline this, maybe that will resolve a lot of questions I've been, not questions that I've had, but answers I've had to provide to the public for the last few days.
I will be glad to. Angela Davis, County Administrator. Good morning, Chairman Howe, members of the board. Today, this is a discussion and possible action item with regards to the Auditor Controller and Government Code Section 24009, wherein it gives counties the options of changing an elected position to an appointed position. So with the Auditor Controller position, as you may be aware, this position has an extremely high level of authority and extremely high level of responsibility. And so because of that, in Government Code Section 26945, it lists mandated requirements for this position. So some of those mandated requirements are a certified public accountant or public accountant, or a bachelor's degree in accounting or the equivalent. Within the last 5 years, they have to have 3 years of experience as a senior fiscal management position, or have a certificate with designation as a professional internal auditor within minimum of 16 college units in accounting, auditing, or finance, or served as county auditor, chief deputy, or chief assistant county auditor for 3 continuous years. So as you can see, those requirements are very focused, they're very streamlined to this position, and they are at the high level. And you may also be aware that in the last several years, just the recruitment environment that we are experiencing, it can be challenging, to say the least, to hire employees, especially with those that have such a very structured requirement focus. And so because of that, when you have an elected position versus an appointed position, an appointed position gives you the flexibility for recruitment. You have a much greater broad spectrum of tools in the toolbox to be able to have a recruitment be successful, as well as an appointed position also allows for retention aspects or facets with regards to that position to continue employment and be able to have continuity of business operations. Also to consider today is also the timing of this proposal. Currently, the elected term is going to be ending January 2nd of 2023 at 11:59 a.m. So because of that election cycle, June of 2022, there will be an election held. And so this item, this proposal to change the Auditor Controller from an elected position to an appointed position, must go before the people for a vote. And so that includes some processes in place, and it also there's some timing. And so right now at this juncture, this is the best, or I would say optimal time to have this consideration of whether or not the board so chooses to move forward or not with this option. Also, I would like to mention that regardless if the position is appointed or elected, there are checks and balances in place that do not go away. Those don't change. For example, we have a third-party independent auditor who comes in and audits the financials for the county. That report is submitted to the State Controller Office, so that checks and balances will remain in place regardless of the position being appointed or elected, as well as we have the Government Accounting Standards Board, which is also known as GASB, who then creates the Governmental Accepted Accounting Principles, which is known as GAAP. So those are principles that we must abide by, as well as the various, as you are fully aware of, the various federal, state, and local laws, including the government revenue and taxation, education, health, and safety sections and codes that we must abide by. So again, there's that checks and balances in place regardless of how this position is held. And also I would like to bring out protection for the position versus election versus appointed, is that both have the ability, and this actually goes to all positions within the county, regardless elected, appointed, regardless of your title. There are in place California whistleblower laws that if you believe that you are being pressured or being asked to do anything that is, you believe, unethical or not lawful, you have the ability to report that because you will not be able to be retaliated against. There's a whole section, whistleblower laws. And so that is available to every single person in the county employee. So regardless if elected or appointed, those measures are still in place, as well as we have our internal personnel department that receives complaints that we investigate or can hire a third-party investigator to come in and take on any type of complaint or concern that is voiced by the employee. Again, I'm speaking very broadly, but it pertains to this aspect of elected versus appointed, but it's something, a message that I want to make sure that's clearly heard by all county staff. So what is the process? There is a process in place, and that is within Government Code Section 24009, and that, like I stated, this proposal would go before the people for a vote. So in essence today, I am just seeking whether or not the board is supportive of moving forward with this proposal, and that if you so choose to, there is a process where we would bring back two resolutions, and those resolutions are in the process of placing this item on the ballot. Then, once it's on the ballot in June, it is then up to the people to vote whether or not they prefer to have an elected or an appointed auditor controller. So truly today, it's just a matter of whether or not you support moving forward in this process. But at the end of the day, it is up to the voters to make that decision as to what they prefer, what they support for their auditor controller for the county. I would also like to mention that there are 9 other counties, counties all the way from Mono to Los Angeles County, that have appointed auditor controllers, and they have been successful. There is a section within Government Code 24009 that allows that if a county decides that they would like to return to the elected format or model, that they may do so by the same process in which they were able to come to be appointed. Thus far, with the 9 counties, they have been successful, and they have remained within that model of having an appointed auditor controller. So it's not necessarily anything new under the sun. However, it is, you know, something that needs to be considered by the board. So with that, I will be more than happy to answer any questions that you have and seek your direction.
So I'm going to be very simple. Two things before me today. First is we have to do an appointment in the interim at some point.
Correct.
To complete the term of the retiring current auditor.
Correct.
And then number two, to place something on the ballot for voters to actually make the decision whether or not they want to appoint it or not.
That is correct.
Let me get that out there because I'm hearing all kinds of strange things.
No, the recruitment was actually launched yesterday,
yeah.
And so it does have a close date of October 26th. Let's see what calendar we're on. The 25th, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Before I go to the board, I think I'll go online.
Sure,
there's one
absolutely.
Caller online.
Caller ending in 2131, you may unmute. It's your turn to speak.
Good morning.
Yes, this is Ann Marsh. I'm totally opposed to this recommendation. I believe that there should be the need to pay for another election on this. We've been doing quite nicely with the elected people that we've had. If there's a requirement, that should be handled when they make the application to be on the ballot. And I think that could be done quite nicely. I don't like to speak in polling. That is supposedly still in the hands of the people, taken away by 5 people that do not necessarily represent the views of the people. And as we know, the voting population is very low in this county. So I am totally opposed to the Board of Supervisors appointing the auditor controls, I believe it should remain an elected position. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Another caller online, Chrissy Reynolds.
Chrissy Reynolds, it's your turn to speak. You may unmute.
Thank you very much. I would like to say I'm also opposed to having an appointment. I prefer an election. And as to Shelley and the COVID, thank you so much for all that you're doing for all of our public health and everyone that is out there. It's a great service that they are providing, and they're doing a great job. So I just wanted to commend the board and say thank you.
Thank you. I'll come back to the board. We'll start.
Sure. I think that at the end of the day, we're being opportunistic in the sense that we have a impending retirement. There's an election cycle. We wouldn't just pull this out of the rabbit out of the hat and decide to do this without that opportunity. I think it will be for the people to decide whether they want to have an elected position or not. I will tell you my experience has been as a supervisor for 12 plus years now. It's been problematic, and I'm not speaking specifically about the auditor position. In general, for any department head, any level, and that goes from the entry level on up, we're struggling to find talent here. And at the end of the day, the auditing world, the accounting world, is not getting easier, it's getting harder. And I've talked to some of my peers, they're in the same predicament, trying to find good, qualified people. I think it just widens the net for us. I will tell you that we probably it'll be telling to see how many people apply for an interim position, quite honestly, that kind of thing. At the end of the day, when it comes to the overall health of this county, that is a strategic, critical piece to this puzzle. And it's not for me to decide, it's going to be for the people to decide. Do you want to give us, the people, more flexibility as a county to run this operation? I personally will never allow it to become a personal matter, what I think personally. I think, again, it's going back to the people who make that decision.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the chair, when you get there.
Just a minute, Supervisor Cobbs.
Sure, no worries.
I knew there was one more public comment, but maybe those questions are answered, so I'll respect that. The hands not getting raised. The way I view it, the final decision will be the voters in June. This idea of the board taking something away from a choice, it's giving another choice to the voters, whether the voters choose to vote for this idea. I have some questions for Ms. Davis, but you answered them. I guess you must have read our minds. but that was the questions I had, was the checks and balances. It's not as though we could hire an auditor as a board and then micromanage and say you have to spend money the way you want you to spend it. In reality, there's checks and balances with state and law and federal law and those sorts of things. So I'm fine with bringing this on board for the voters to decide in June.
Go to Supervisor Cobbs, have a quick. He's...
Yeah.
Sure. Yes, John, I agree. The decision today, I think, is before us, is whether or not to give direction to the CAO to move forward on putting this on the ballot. That's the decision. It'll be ultimately up to the voters, as many of you board members have already indicated, for the voters to make that choice. It won't be five supervisors voting on that and saying yes. It'll be we're voting yes or no to putting it on the ballot for the voters to make that decision. And so, and I'm supportive of it.
Supervisor Urban.
What Supervisor Cobbs have said? That'll just make it easier.
I'm supportive as well. It's a lot like, it's not that we're going to take the sheriff's position away, but it's a lot like what we had constitutionally had to do. We had an appointment constitutionally we had to make because of a retirement. And we did so, and it'll be on the next ballot, whether or not you choose to keep the sheriff that we appointed or elect a new one. This is similar, with the exception it's a two-step thing. We're asking the voters whether or not they support this being appointed or whether or not they want it to continue to be an elected position. So, you know, with everybody said I oppose or I'm for or I'm against, well, you're going to get your chance to vote for that. And we're not taking that choice away from you. So I support this as well.
So if I could just take it back real quick, I would remind you, and you mentioned, Ms. Davis, that this is not the first go-around for this county to do this. Other counties have already gone down that path, and it runs the gamut. And again, I think we have checks and balances that will be embedded, whether this is an appointed or an elected position. We always have to have an outside audit. And the board can rotate on an audit committee. Again, I think the people, the methodology for having an elected auditor, I think, was very valid back in the day. It's less valid today because of the complexities that it required. Thank you.
Did you want me to make mention of some correspondence that we received?
Surely.
Okay. At the clerk's level last night and again this morning, the clerk's office received emails from Louise Gliotto, Sheila Meamber, Richard Marshall, and Jack Phillips, and all asking that the position remain elected.
And they shall vote.
Thank you.
I think a lot of people just read the agenda quickly and didn't understand the 2-3-step process that the board's required to go through by law. Okay. That said, I'm going to recess the board and convene as Flood Control and Water Conservation District.
What are we doing on this item?
It was just direction.
Do we need a formal vote, though?
It doesn't say that on my agenda sheet.
You don't need a formal vote. This is Ed Kearney, County Council. You don't need a formal vote. If you wanted to give direction vis-a-vis a motion, you can do so, but it's not necessary. Obviously, it would be brought back to the board and voted on at that time. If you want to vote.
Okay, gotcha. All right, got it. Thank you.
Yeah, the direction is on the agenda sheet.
Yeah, I'm reading it. It said possible action, so that's all the reason I was questioning it.
Okay. You good? I guess. All right. Public comment under Flood Control and Water Conservation District. Callers online specific to the Flood Control and Water Conservation District. Seeing none and seeing none in house. Matt Parker, Natural Resources.
Good morning, board members, district board members. Matt Parker, Natural Resources. I invited or asked Pat Belines from the Department of Water Resources to come before you and the public and provide some information regarding upcoming AEM surveys. She's going to describe what that is. It's very dense technical material regarding geology study the DWR is going to do. And so because it's using a helicopter, there's going to be a lot of questions and comments from the public. So I thought it'd be good if she came before you all and provide some information and answer any questions. So with that, I will kick it to Pat.
Hi, can you hear me?
Good morning, Pat.
It'll be an echo there.
She's going to need to turn off her
computer. We can hear you.
She needs to turn off.
I think the slides are being shown from you all. Is that right? I don't have a pulled up. Do you?
We're working on it.
Great. And fix it. Okay.
Hi, my name is Pat Valines, and I'm the regional coordinator and the senior engineering geologist with the Department of Water Resources in Red Bluff. And this presentation is an overview of the statewide airborne electromagnetic surveys, this project that's going to be conducted in Siskiyou County. The project manager is Dr. Catherine DeLuback from our headquarters office in Sacramento. So if you have any questions, I can give you her email. The photo on the left is the airborne EM transmitter and receiver loop being transported via helicopter. So that's what you're going to be seeing flying over. And the photo on the right is a two-dimensional grid fence diagram of airborne EM data results. So that's the flown grid lines and tie lines. Next slide, please. So the goal of airborne AEM surveys is to improve the understanding of large-scale aquifer structures, which aids in the development or refinement of a hydrologic conceptual model and identification of possible recharge areas, which many people are interested in Siskiyou County. Next slide. Airborne EM is a geophysical method that measures the electrical properties of subsurface materials from helicopter-mounted equipment. The AEM equipment is housed in a large hoop frame that is securely hung from the helicopter. The helicopter carries the equipment approximately 100 feet above the ground surface and collects data along a defined flight path. The flight paths are designed to collect data over open spaces and avoid residential areas and structures containing people or confined livestock. The helicopter is flown by experienced pilots who follow all FAA regulations. And then the collected AEM data is interpreted to show the distribution of coarse grain and fine grain materials in the subsurface, which improves the understanding of aquifer structures. And AEM is being flown statewide in high and medium priority basins, and the Siskiyou basins are medium priority. Next slide. So the project implementation, there's more on this slide, I don't know where it went, but anyways, it's okay. So there's $12 million from Prop 68 in the general fund. There's no cost to the county. It's conducted in all high and medium priority basins where data collection is feasible. It's not collected in urban areas. Siskiyou, Wasson, Modoc basins are being flown in one effort, Scott, Shasta, Butte, Tule Lake, and Big Valley. It's about roughly 10 to 13 days of air time. Data collection is in a coarse grid, and I'm going to show you that on the next slide. Grid-oriented to capture major geologic features and avoid noise sources. And then the data is collected in defined areas over the next 3 years, but you are at the forefront of the calendar, which is pretty nice. The data is not available until approximately 6 months after a survey is complete, and it'll be made publicly available on our California Natural Resource website, the CNRA website. Next slide, please. So the survey flight lines, this is an example of a coarse grid flight line. The data is collected in coarse grid of approximately 2 miles by 8 miles spacing. It improves the understanding of local and regional aquifer structure. It identifies areas for additional investigations if needed. And the survey lines are edited, given input from the GSAs and state and federal agencies to cover important areas. And we went and spoke to Matt and all the consultants to figure out the approximate areas that they were most interested in. Okay, next slide. So what is geophysics? Geophysics is the study of the physical properties of the Earth, which are listed there, and then the physical properties are related to the material properties as shown on the slide. So you're looking at the resistivity and conductivity and relating it to the lithology, porosity, hydraulic conductivity, etc. So we're comparing the two and matching them. Next slide. The electrical geophysical methods measure resistivity of rocks and the ability of a material to resist the flow of an electric current. So, and the conductivity of the rocks is the ability of the material to flow to conduct electric current. The resistance and conductivity are inversely related as shown in this table. So the clays are generally low resistivity or more conductive. And you can see on there, it's approximately a 10 to 100 ohmmeters for clays. And gravels and sands are higher resistivity or less conductive. So they have a more of a higher resistivity signature between 1,000 and 10,000 ohmmeters. And you need resistivity and conductivity contrast to locate structures, ore bodies, and recharge areas. Next slide. So EM deployment, there are numerous ways to deploy EM equipment, including by boat, fixed wing, airplane, ATV, helicopter, or by collecting data at a single reference point. The above right schematic shows the typical ground surface EM array with the receiver coil and receiver stationed in the center of the transmitter loop and the transmitter equipment. The airborne loop contains both the transmitter and receiver coils. Next slide. As seen in this schematic, the AEM method uses weak current in the transmitter loop to generate a magnetic field. As the current diffuses into the ground, eddy currents are created at subsurface layers with changes in electrical properties. The eddy currents then create secondary magnetic fields, which are detected by receiver coils in the towed loop. This decay of the secondary magnetic field is measured as a voltage by the receiver and can be seen on the plot in the next slide. Please. So on the left, the AEM raw data is measured as voltage decay over time, the left plot, which is transformed to the apparent resistivity versus time, center plot, and then the apparent resistivity versus time is inverted to a distribution of resistivity with depth. And that's what you're trying to get at. You want to know how is the resistivity changing with depth, so you can figure if you have higher resistivity coarse grain material or lower resistivity fine grain material, which will tell you if you have clays or sands, or if you have better aquifer material versus finer material, which does not transmit the water. Next slide, please. So as the helicopter flies, if you look on the left at the top, that's a cross section. So one point, what I just showed you on the last plot, that was one data point. And this is a whole array, a whole cross-section on a flight line of data on the top plot. So as the helicopter flies the grid path, it collects a cross-section of one-dimensional soundings, and then the flight lines and tie lines cross-sections, they create a two-dimensional resistivity fence diagram, which can be seen on the lower right. Okay, next slide, please. So the airborne EM data depth of investigation is 1,000 feet below ground surface, and the depth of investigation varies based on subsurface rock properties. The most resistive sediments, the yellow, purple colors, and the deeper of the depth of investigation. So more resistive, we get deeper depth of investigation. More conductive sediments, like your clays and silts, the blue and green, and the shallower the depth of investigation. You can't see as far in the subsurface. Next slide. So as mentioned previously, the airborne EM data uncertainty in interpretation can be reduced with the use of high quality existing data, including borehole lithologic logs and electronic logs, subsurface electronic logs, collecting water level measurements and borehole water quality data. So AECOM, which is one of the subcontractors, collected all this information for Siskiyou County from Larry Walker and other databases. So they have all that data to tie it to the geophysics data and reduce geophysics data uncertainty. Next slide. So to refine and calibrate our model geophysical data, we use existing borehole lithologic logs too. So we just put in that TSS well, and so we have borehole geophysics data, and borehole lithologic and borehole geophysics data. Next slide. So to refine and calibrate our model geophysical data, we also use existing borehole resistivity data, which we have on numerous borehole logs within the county. Next slide. So how can ADM data be used? The top left, you can use it for groundwater or hydrogeologic conceptual models, so to refine the model that you created for the GSP. On the right, you look for recharge areas or additional studies, like they have fault zones or clays or different subsurface features you're looking for. On the bottom left, the clay's susceptible to compaction down in the Central Valley. That's what they're using it for. And on the right is for high total dissolved solids. If you see the red plume on there in the Central Valley, they have a lot of issues with salt and nitrate, and they are looking for these plumes. Next slide. And then the AEM lithologic model, this is looking at an aquifer down by the Corcoran area. So the upper aquifer is that red, and then at the red at the top of the cross section, the Corcoran clay was defined is right below it, and then they have a lower aquifer. So people use this to define their subsurface down in the southern region. Next slide. The safety of the airborne EM instrument. So the AEM instrument flies 100 feet above the ground. The helicopter is 200 feet above the ground. And the noise generated is less than an operating lawnmower, so it's pretty quiet. Professional experience and licensed pilots follow all FAA regulations. The surveys are not conducted over urban areas. There's too much noise, basically. It's hard to discern the signal-to-noise ratio. Buildings, confined livestock, military bases, and FAA no-fly zones. Next slide. The safety of the weak magnetic field emitted by the transmitter loop is depicted above in that little diagram. So somewhere between the magnetic field of household appliances, a toaster and a mixer, and it's well below the public and occupational reference levels. Next slide. So Catherine's working on outreach materials. Right now, we have an AEM website. You just Google DWR AEM, that website there, and there's a ton of information. There's a Prop 68 fact sheet. There's existing data fact sheet. There's a survey schedule and a map. There's a two-minute AEM video if you didn't understand any of this. There's frequently asked questions. There's a presentation slide deck. And then they're going to put a press release in the local papers and on social media, and they're going to send survey notification letters to residents, the parcels that are beneath the flight lines. Next slide. And that's it. So, you got any questions?
Probably. Supervisor Chris.
Actually, that was such a great presentation. You got a lot of my questions, so thank you.
Well, thanks, Brendan.
One thing I did have was health factors, and you answered that. I know that would be a concern, you know, anybody would have seeing someone fly over. Would there be any cancer cause or anything like that? And you answered that question for me. You pretty well answered the question on local knowledge. So that before they fly over, there is mapping, and they are referring to the local knowledge or the consultant's knowledge as well.
Yes, and the flight lines were adjusted based on where we're allowed to fly and not allowed to fly. So I made that pretty grid pattern, but it doesn't look like that. It's kind of a little bit skewed. They have an approximate set of grid lines right now, but they have to go around the confined livestock, the FAA no-fly zones, and then they also they have to check which parcels they are flying over so that they can send letters to the residents so that they're not wondering what this thing is flying over their head. So it's a notification as well.
Good, good. And then for the notification, I take it we dealt with this with another issue. It'd be fairly clear, one or two pages, good description and everything. Easy to understand.
Yeah, I can get the fact sheet, and I can ask, I can get this info to Matt. Since I'm not sending the letters, but I can get the info from Catherine as to what she's sending, and I can pass that to Matt.
Perfect, just to prepare us for questions we may be receiving and everything. And then, I know one area that we've had well problems in the county is in domestic well water in some of the rural subdivisions. That aquifer's been impacted by various factors. And I know you can't fly over homes. Is there a way of flying over those subdivisions to detect groundwater recharge areas or obtain knowledge about those areas safely?
I think that's because this is such a high level type of thing, I think they're already looking for that. Like out in, I know in Big Valley, they were looking kind of not within the valley, but just a little northwest of it in a recharge area that they were interested in. And I know the consultants also had areas that they thought would be good that we are targeting. So so they may not be right where the dry wells are, but it may be nearby.
All right. And so you think we may be able to obtain data for rural subdivisions and what their water supply is?
I can, if you send your request to me, I can get that information from Catherine. I'd have to ask her on that because I don't have the exact locations of the flight lines and whether it's tied to the small water systems or not. But if you are having small water issues and small or domestic supply issues, I've told Matt about our drought funding that they have for $200 million that is out right now for the counties to apply for this funding. And I'm pretty sure he's already looked into this, but there is drought funding available for putting in like a well in certain areas. If you have maybe numerous wells in one area that need like a central well to pump from to tie into, there's funding for that, and there's other options for it's not just for individual well owners, but it'd be over a small area.
No, thank you, and I'll type that. Sometimes I do better if I type out a question. I'll run it by staff where they can make sure it sounds good, and we'll send it off to you. Coincidentally, I had a dream last night about drilling a deep well in one area, provided for a community. I guess this subject's top of our minds.
It's top of my mind too.
And then for me, what this comes down to is it's a free service we're getting for the county to map this. Not free, it comes from taxpayer dollars, but it's not coming from Sigma funding from the county itself. It'll allow us to target the areas in the county, know those areas that need to be impacted or looked at, and as well as identify the prime recharge areas, so limited funds we do have can be spent wisely. So I appreciate what you're doing in your presentation.
Great. Thank you, Brandon.
Through the chair.
Yes, sir. Mr. Thompson.
Pat. Really appreciate the great work you do and the relationship we have with your group. And just a couple quick questions. One, you stated Larry Walker and other data that was available. Who are the other entities on the other data?
It would be from our DWR website. Basically, we have an online system for well completion reports. We have shallow and all the well data that we can find in that you have provided, the Siskiyou County's provided, and we have a web application, and we use that data, basically any data that's publicly available.
Okay, and then lastly, we're gonna get asked this, and I'm sure you've already heard it. How do we get those water saving reduction projects that have occurred in credited into the model, or is that even a possibility?
I'd ask Laura on that, but I absolutely, it should be in there in your GSP. Anything that you've done already, it should be in the history of the, you can add it in to the history of the groundwater sustainability plan, anything you've already done. And future projects or anything that's been helpful or created more water savings that you have past historic knowledge of and you want to continue doing or expand, I think you should put it in your GSP.
Okay.
Still there, Supervisor Kopsev?
He'll be offline for a bit.
Okay.
Right, man.
Yeah.
Pat, this is Supervisor Ogren. I'm pretty confident that people are going to have issues in the public about the EMF question. So I hope that'll be addressed in your public notifications.
Yes, I'll make sure that the safety issue is clearly pointed out in Catherine's outreach materials. I think she already kind of knows that, but since I haven't seen it yet, I will double check that the safety concerns are well documented.
Thank you. And then how far in advance are you going to notify the public?
They were going to do it, initially we were going to fly mid-October, but there's lack of helicopters right now due to the fire, so it looks like we're going to be flying the end of October. And I think they were going to put it out 2 weeks ahead of time. Sometimes if you put it out too soon, people forget, and if you put it out too late, then they're upset. So I think it was a couple of weeks beforehand that they would be sending it out, a notification. But I'll double check that with Catherine.
And then on the off chance that somebody refuses to let that equipment fly over their property, what are you going to do?
I think they'll have to take it to directly to Catherine and see, discuss the issues with her.
Okay, because I just have...
What was that?
I just have a strange feeling that somebody might refuse at some point. It's an odd piece of equipment.
Most of it is concerns for safety, and most of it's concerns for, they're nervous about something, and that's one of the reasons why they wanted to get the information out ahead of time.
Right. And
give people a chance to react if they need to, or questions.
Right. And how long is this mapping data valid?
Oh, it's valid for a long time, because the subsurface isn't changing that fast. So,
I would think so. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm good. It was a good presentation.
Hey, Pat. This is Supervisor Howe.
Hi.
I got a couple of questions. One. I kind of get that this is going to create somewhat of a subsurface topographic kind of look at the Earth.
Yep, it'll give you some underground, basically a cross-section of how the resistivity changes with depth.
Okay, and in particular with Scott Valley, I welcome this because I get so tired of hearing that Scott Valley is just a bathtub full of marbles. And I'm looking for this kind of scientific data to actually portray that it's much more complex.
And it should be able to tie in with your HD on your hydrologic conceptual model that is in the groundwater sustainability plan and just refine it.
Will you be able then to calculate for a subbasin the total water storage?
I know there's estimates of it, or it should be in the GSP, and I'm not exactly sure how that will change with this data, but I'm sure they'll attempt that. But I'm not exactly sure the direct relationship.
Okay. Another question as far as what are the boundaries of the basin that will be mapped? I'm interested in how it transitions to the upland.
Right now, it's the basin boundary for the current basin boundary on our basin prioritization on our database in our BP database. It's all the current delineation is right there. If you want to take a look at it on our DWR website, it's the Scott Valley, the Shasta Valley, and the Butte Valley groundwater basin current boundary.
Is it fair to say that it will at least point out that the boundary is where the inputs are to the aquifer?
And most of that should be already defined, but I think it will within the GSP. But this will just assist in subsurface structures, kind of defining the layers.
Then one other question. I saw you're using the resistance, et cetera, to map the harder structures. So if you encounter, say, a karst topography, limestone, and there's a deep-lying aquifer underneath it, how far does this penetrate down to map that?
So it'll go 1,000 feet for highly resistive beds, and it'll be shallower for that. Because in more conductive zones, it's kind of the electrical pond more, so it doesn't see as deep into the subsurface. So basically, it could be 500 feet, but most of the more resistive sediments down to 1,000 feet.
Okay. Well, that's good news. All right. I don't think there's any more questions of the board. I have a few callers online, public comment. Thank you, Pat, for your presentation.
Thanks, Rand.
Mm-hmm. First caller.
Caller ending in 2131. You may now unmute and speak.
Good morning. Hello?
Hello, this is Anne Marsh. I have a comment. I'm really concerned that the state is relying on the Larry Walker Associates data because of their data was based only on the years 1991 to 2011. And as we know, all the drought that we've experienced and all the lack of snowfall have fallen since 2011. And that data is available. I can find it online, so certainly Larry Walker Associates could have found that data. However, they chose not to use it. I believe that data should really be looked at carefully. And as far as the EMS, I'm opposed to them, but they're all over the place. To get back to Larry Walker and the state relying on that, I would also say that there should be a deep look into what the Siskiyou Conservation District wells are and whether they are the appropriate wells that should be used. I know that has nothing to do with the flyover, but it's a fact, and they're relying on that data also. So I think the state should really look at the data they're relying on because, in my opinion, it's not correct data. Thank you.
Thank you. Next caller.
Chrissy, you may unmute. It's your turn to speak.
Thank you very much. I would also like to echo my concerns about the EMFs. We're made out of mostly water, and a lot of our innovations that we've been marketed and sold has always said, well, we've got the data to show that this is safe, and then we go down the road some more and then we find out that it's not safe, and there's numerous examples to that. So I have great concerns about the use of this type of technology being used on the public this purpose. Siskiyou County has a lot of resources, and I just think a lot of times the state, it's used against us in this county. I have some concerns about that, but mostly of the health concerns. And then, like Supervisor Ogren had said, informed consent. Where is our informed consent? We've got 2 weeks of notice that this is going to be happening. And what if we don't want you flying over our area? What if we don't want to be part of the survey? Where is our opportunity to opt out? So those are my concerns, and I thank you again for hearing this.
Thank you. I'd like to remind the callers, or clarify to the callers, that we started this presentation with this work is only being done in a medium and high priority aquifers, which isn't by far the bulk of the county. Geographically, it's Scott Valley, Butte Valley, and Chatsville.
Is that too late?
Yeah, too late, excuse me. I tend to walk down Butte Valley. Sorry about that, Mr. President Chris.
Good.
Angelina Cook, good morning.
Hi. Thank you. I'm Angelina Cook from the McLeod Watershed Council. I am hoping that this new data from Department of Water Resources will help to give Siskiyou County a better idea of what type of natural storage we do have. I think a lack of data in this region has preempted responsible water management in the past. So I'm not too familiar with the technology, but it does seem kind of like a high-tech way to achieve an eventual result of just using less and conserving more and being a little more cautious about how we use our water resources in Siskiyou County. I did want to thank Pat Valines for raising the issue of the $200 million available right now for drought response, emergency drought response. I know in McLeod we have some eligible projects that I think would be eligible for this drought funding, and I'm wondering if you mentioned maybe Matt Parker knows about any, if there's any coordinated effort at the county to combine the communities in Siskiyou County that may have projects eligible for emergency drought funding, if there's any effort to coordinate those at the county level.
Thank you.
And it's your... Just hoping, it's very difficult to hear some of the supervisors' comments on Zoom. Maybe if you could point your voice towards the recorder. I'm not sure how it's working in the boardroom, but I could barely hear Supervisor Hoft. So thank you.
Thank you for that. I can't control what goes out of here. Again, the microphone's 3 inches from my mouth. So with that, I think we're finished with that topic. So Wendy, I have minute approval, C and D under 8.
Yeah, for flood district minutes, I've received no corrections for either.
Move to approve both.
Move to approve.
Second.
And that was both of them, correct? Thank you. Excuse me, Director Chris.
Hi.
Director Cobb-Seff.
He's not online.
Okay, Director Valenzuela.
Yep.
Director Ogren.
Hi.
And Director Haupt.
Hi. I'm going to adjourn the Flood Control and Water Conservation District, reconvene as the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors, and I'm going to move down to the public hearings. In the agenda, item 12A, sorry, Collier, I believe, so... Opening.
It is just a public hearing, correct?
It's a public hearing. Yep. So, good morning.
Good morning.
So you have a presentation to make.
Yes.
Please do so.
Thank you. And thank you for moving up in time. Sarah Collard, Director of Health and Human Services. And I'm actually going to turn it over to Tracy Lima, who's the Clinical Director for the Behavioral Health Division, and Samantha Sweeter, who is our new MHSA coordinator, who took the position that Cami Reitmeier was formerly in. So I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. It's almost good afternoon. So thank you guys so much. Samantha is at home working. very diligently because she's out this week. So she's going to be narrating the slides, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that come up. So thank you guys so much for your time. Go ahead, Samantha, when you get the go-ahead.
Samantha, you should be able to speak.
There we go. Thank you so much. Hi, everybody. Sorry I can't be there. My bush leader. All right. We've taken highlights from the annual update that you are being asked to approve and put them into the slideshow for easy review. If you could next slide, please. Yeah. HSA is made up of five components, community services and supports, which is made up of three sub-components, full service partnership, outreach and engagement, and general system and development. Then we have prevention and early intervention, innovation, workforce education and training, and capital facilities and technology. Next slide, please. Under CSS, we have served 1,419 clients in 1920. These funds also provide support to our contract partners at Six Stones Wellness Center and on Main Street, Wairika. They contribute to the No Place Like Home initiative, which is set to break ground on a 50-unit low-income housing complex in March of 2022 to help ease the homeless epidemic in Siskiyou County. And it grants behavioral health membership to integrated care collaboratives throughout the county, such as the Siskiyou Healthcare Collaborative and the Tule Lake Healthcare Collaborative. Next slide. These services for youth are targeted for children across varying age and grade ranges in schools and resource centers across the county, from Happy Camp to Tule Lake and McLeod to Etna. Many of these contractors are ones we have partnered with before, though some are expanding their services, like Tiny Mighty and Strong, and others are new to us, like Dunamis Wellness, which will be offering services in McLeod and Weed School this year. Next slide, please. Services for adults. ImageSA supports the Happy Camp Community Actions efforts towards recovery and wellness of Slater Fire survivors. The Tule Lake and Doris areas will continue to have translation services. Crisis services will continue to be offered at the hospitals and jails 24/7 to help reduce the overburden of our communities mentally ill. And for more complete details of CSS, this can be found on pages 17 to 34 in the annual update. Next slide, please. Following our contractors that we've worked with before and will be renewing contracts with again, Lotus Educational provides mental health first aid and suicide prevention with an emphasis on first responders and educators. Pelican is for youth-led stigma-reducing mental health videos. Peru Tribal Housing Authority for gathering with Native Americans. First Five Siskiyou for mental health screening of youth ages 0 to 5. And Healthy Siskiyou Mobile Unit for COVID testing and linkage to substance use disorder and mental health services. Pages 36 and 37 of our annual update provides a breakdown of our PEI contract providers for the upcoming 21-22 year. Next slide, please. Innovation is, this is a 4.5-year multi-county project and is entering its third year. This project is a collaborative approach with five other counties ranging in size from large to frontier and focused on standardizing outcome definitions and improving a beneficiary's ability to reach wellness and recovery. Next slide, please. Thank you. Workforce education and training funds will continue to be used to contribute to the continued education of staff, training for community providers, and partnering with ImageSA statewide to fund scholarships, stipends, and loan forgiveness for those hard-to-fill professional positions. Lastly, capital facilities and technology needs have and will continue to provide behavioral health, electronic health record, and all software upgrades, equipment, and IT training as necessary. That's, I believe, our final slide. So during the 30-day comment period, we did receive feedback from Karen Pop, the executive director of First Five. And I don't have it for you to read, I'll just read it out loud, if that's all right. Karen said that based on feedback at community input sessions, First Quest has led a collaborative effort with the FRCs to adopt a data collection system that can benefit the PEI framework. It is recommended that Apricot 360 data collection platform be adopted for coordination and system integration between First 5, MHSA, FRCs, and other PEI grantees for the purpose of better outcome measurement. The First 5 SKU, First 5 SKU would like to acknowledge the support from MHSA in organizing community input sessions. As a result, together with behavioral health, we expanded systems and access to early childhood preventative screenings using ASQ as well as trauma-informed parenting education program. Continued collective investment in FRCs is a cornerstone for community-based support for building protective factors and assets in families and communities. In response to the feedback from Karen, Behavioral Health has reviewed Apricot 360 and has determined it would be a beneficial tool for our PEI providers, and we'll be moving forward with the software and submitting an addendum of the budget to the Board of Supervisors to review. That completes our initial presentation, though I know Director Collard and Clinical Director Lima have additional comments they'd like to share.
I would like to add just one other piece of feedback that we received. It came in, after the 30-day comment and after we had already submitted our annual update. I just wanted to bring to the board's attention that we had a slight oversight within our innovation budget in the write-up of the budget. The overall projected budget for the five-year innovation project, it's a five-year, when we wrote the last plan, it was a four-and-a-half-year, was that that overall budget has not changed. We, in the oversight of having a brand new MHSA coordinator and myself kind of newly taking the lead, we neglected to work as closely with our fiscal department as we should have in updating our numbers. So the budget has not changed, but we would like to request that we go forward with approving our annual update as all of that information is correct, and we will, as soon as the plan is approved, the update is approved, we will go in and update the numbers and make sure that they balance to Banner and work very closely with our fiscal officer. So that was the other piece of information we wanted to share. And with that, if anyone has any questions.
I'll get that in a minute. Are there any other staff reports, Lindsay, on this?
And no correspondence at clerk's level.
Okay. And I don't see any comment online. I guess it's a hearing. I'm going to close this hearing. And then bring it back to the board. Board, any discussion or questions you may have?
Sure. I had a supervisor from another county say once we solve mental health, we'll have ourselves out of jobs.
That would be fabulous. I have an RV to go camping with.
That's it. It's one of those issues that doesn't get a great deal of speaking at board meetings, but it's core to everything that we face and deal with. Just a couple of detailed questions. How are we doing with staffing? I saw the workforce ad. It can be used for forgive loans or help pay loans for staff coming in. What do you see in regards to that aspect? Because I know there's not an oversupply of people in this profession to help us.
Right. It's a very timely question, actually. Sorry, you just forwarded an email that the loan forgiveness program, I'm going to hand it over to you to answer about that.
So, yes, staffing is very challenging, and I think increasingly so in the healthcare business for reasons I think that we're all well aware of. We are, this year we have a new program. We're partnering with other Northern California counties and with Humboldt and Chico State and offering stipends to individuals who are interested in entering the behavioral health field and obtaining a master's or an undergraduate degree. And then in addition, have the ability to pay stipends to people that come to work for behavioral health. So we're hoping to increase the behavioral health workforce across the county and across the region. So not just for our department, but for the clinics and otherwise. So,
is there any partnership with Siskiyou Works on this?
We have
maybe not for master's degrees, but for certificates and
Yes, not yes, not through the MHSA plan, but we're certainly in discussions with them.
Okay.
And I'm through the Healthcare Collaborative Subcommittee primarily, of which I'm participating, so we are closely with them.
Great, thank you. And then one thing I appreciate about this plan is it's countywide. So, for example, there's a saying, God helps those that help themselves. So you have Training Way Strong that takes on something in the Two Lake View Valley area. They reach out, and then your organization brilliantly partners with, which I compliment for. Or you have McLeod, which started their FRC yet, or Helping Happy Camp. It's those areas that come together, and then they may not have the tools, but they have the goals and objectives, and then your department provides the tools and funding to help them succeed for all constituents. So thank you. I'm glad to see that in the MHSA plan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So do I need a motion to accept this, or?
Yes.
I do. Okay, so.
I'll make a recommended motion without have to make a comment.
Sure.
Okay,
I thought maybe you were done, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
I'll second.
Thank you.
I just appreciate all this gets done on the mental health side. You know, it's really kind of, with this pandemic, it's kind of really brings it to the forefront a little bit. You know, I know it's a tough line of work. I appreciate everyone that's involved in that. Rural County, we always struggle to find talent. Anything we can do on that front, you know, I'm going to support. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, there's so much to talk about. sitting on that board with you is enlightening and frustrating all at the same time. So many people have issues and so many people don't step up to help. And it's always a struggle to get people that want to serve on a board and want to step up and be that person to help, or at least suggest how to help. There's so many issues that need attention. So many ways to try to spend money that just get stuck. And so many ways that we sit and try to figure out how to help people that can't help themselves. And here we sit and try to make it all work. Lots to do. So you have my support in any way that I possibly can help. And I second that motion, if it hasn't.
Yes.
You already did. I was thirded.
And thank you for participating on that board. We appreciate it.
I also have one more comment, which is that I think it is, you know, it's our goal to expand services throughout the county, and I think particularly in communities like Happy Camp and, you know, Doris and Tule Lake, we really want to move funding out as much as possible off the corridor just because there are more services here. And I have to say we have amazing partners in both of those places and throughout the county, so we partner with many people, as you see in the community resource centers, and it just first five, all of them have really stepped up and provide amazing services with not a lot of resources. So I just want to make you aware of their work in the communities, because we can fund it, but we can't do it all. So they really carry the water for us.
Sure.
And for the community.
Well, something's changed. I don't know if the mental health patients that were on the streets in the valley have gone to where we can now, or what? But
maybe.
Well,
it kind of looks like that.
You know, I'm just an observer.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not seeing it in the valley anymore. And I don't know what happened to those people. I hope they're treated.
I hope so too.
Yeah. It's an impossible task. As I drive around Wairika, I just shake my head.
Challenging.
Wish we had more mental health facilities, because I don't see a lot of people without homes that aren't in some kind of mental decline.
And substance use disorder services.
Sure.
Yes, hand
sure.
in hand.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have a motion and a second. Wendy?
Okay. Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Do we have Supervisor Kopseff back yet?
He is back on the line.
Okay. Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
Thank you. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Hupp?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. Next one.